What the Health with Gabby Allen on FUBAR Radio.
Well, hello everybody and welcome back to my show, What the Health. On this show, we dive into the infinite world of health and fitness with its never-ending myths, hot topics and new methods for us to try. Every week, we invite some of the wellness industry leaders and professionals to discuss and dissect new trends and misconceptions, and trust me, we learn a thing or two along the way. Also, at the end of every show, I respond to your guys' fitness questions because I love being a part of your journey. So after today's show, if you have anything you want to ask, make sure you fire them over and I'll do my best to answer them on next week's show. Today, we have yet another very interesting show ahead of us. Later, we're going to be joined by Jason Frost, owner of Fitbox Gym. A very intriguing conversation. If you don't know who he is, go and look him up and stay tuned. And Catherine Rebess, registered dietitian specialising in gastro and nutrition support. But joining me now is Dr. Simon Cork, senior lecturer in physiology and, physiology, that's what it says here, at Anglia Ruskin University. How are you today, Dr. Simon Cork? Thanks for joining us.
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. So, I want to talk to you about the burning question that everyone's talking about these days, weight loss jabs and pills. Do they actually work?
The short answer, so it depends what you're talking about and which ones you're talking about. The ones that are getting the media traction at the minute, so the Wegovy, Mounjaro, yes, they are by far the most effective weight loss medications that we've had on the market to date. For the vast majority of people, they are effective at causing huge amounts of weight loss that is, you know, massively beneficial to people's health. There are lots of claims on the internet of drugs that can help lose weight, but most of those are untested or don't have the same kind of scientific
like the black rigor. Market ones.
Exactly, yeah. But the ones that have been sort of doing the rounds on the getting the media traction, the people have been getting quite excited about. Yeah, they're getting excited for a good reason.
Well, I mean, it's Elon Musk and Kim Kardashian that are banging on about this Wegovy, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously they're just the biggest social media people in the world. So this actually makes me afraid though, because I haven't really heard about like slim loss pills and stuff since back in the day. So now that this has like come about, maybe it's just because I haven't been using them, but now that this has come about, it just makes me afraid that people are going to be using them for the wrong reasons. Surely they can't be good for you, right? How does it actually affect the body?
Well, I think we have to remember that this is medication in the same way that blood pressure tablets are medication.
Okay.
Or, you know, painkillers are medication. These are not drugs that are developed for aesthetic reasons. Okay, so the people for whom these drugs have been designed are those with the extreme levels of obesity for which that level of obesity is detrimental to their health. And we know that in those people that, in fact, in anyone, it's really, really difficult to lose weight, particularly if you are in the obese category. But we know that weight loss is the single greatest contributor to bettering that person's health that there is. So these drugs are not slimming pills in the sense that, you know, if you are already slim, that you can take these to lose a few pounds before you go on holiday. These drugs are medications prescribed to people who are struggling with their weight and whose weight is a significant detriment to their health.
Okay, so they're medicinally, you can tell I'm not a doctor, right? They're made for medical reasons, but they also do work on slimmer people too.
Well, the clinical trials that have been shown, that have been done on these drugs, have all been done in people with very high levels of obesity. So that's where the proof is. And what we know is that as with any medication, these drugs are by and large very safe. But as with any medication, they are not without side effects. Now, if you have someone, and some of those side effects can be quite significant, albeit rare. Now, if you take someone who's very obese, BMI over 35, for example, then the health implications of being obese far outweigh any risk associated with these medications.
Okay.
But if you are someone who is not obese, if you are someone who is at a healthy weight, or maybe even just slightly overweight and wants to lose a few pounds, the benefit to risk ratio of that drug narrows. It becomes, it's the risks associated with being overweight or being the weight that that person is, i.e. not overweight, does not outweigh the risks associated with the drugs. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So say someone like me, there would be more risk taking the drugs than there is being, because I'm not overweight. So there's more risk, yeah, side effects for taking the drug than my weight.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, if you are not overweight, then you know, by and large, your weight is not causing you a health issue. Now, that's not to say that from an aesthetic perspective, because there are two sides to look at body weight. There's the health and there's the aesthetic. From an aesthetic perspective, completely understand why people, you know, want to keep on top of their weight and may want to lose weight. But we're talking here from a medical perspective. So obesity is a medical condition. It has proven significant health risks associated with it, and the medications that have been released over the last year or so are designed to help treat those people who have medical risks associated with their body weight.
Okay, so speaking of which, things that have been approved recently, the NHS has recently approved a revolutionary new weight loss pill that contains a gastric balloon, which opens in the stomach. That is just wild to me. How are these medications, how do they help within the NHS's battle against obesity? Do you think this is the way forward?
Well, I think, so that's sort of two things, where the big impact that I think we're going to see over the next 5, 10, 15 years are these medications like Wegovy that are appetite suppressants. So these drugs work by suppressing your normal appetite pathways. Now, what happens when you lose weight is that your body goes into this starvation mode. It wants to protect your body weight at all costs. Now, if you are overweight or obese, your body thinks that that's your normal weight. And when you start to lose weight, it will, things like hunger, loss of lower metabolism, feeling tired, those sorts of things will kick in to try and bring your body weight back up. What these drugs do is that they suppress your appetite, so that physiological desire to put your body weight back up, to eat, to raise your body weight, doesn't occur. Those are the ones that we're going to see more of over the next 10, 15 years, and they are just going to get better and better. I think some of the drugs that are coming through the clinical trials are showing, an average 25% body weight loss, which is massive. The one that you spoke about then, the gastric balloon in a pill, I mean, we've been using gastric balloons for a while to treat obesity. They don't work in the same way. What they do is they essentially put a big bubble in your stomach so that the capacity of your stomach is less, so that you can eat, let's say, it forces you to eat less. What that doesn't do is suppress that normal biological pressure that occurs when you lose weight that makes you start eating more and reducing your activity levels. So those gastric balloons are quite useful for people who maybe need to lose weight very quickly in order to go off. So let's say, for example, you've got a patient who needs a hip replacement, but actually their body weight puts that operation at a significantly more dangerous position than it would be. So that patient might need to lose a lot of body weight very quickly in order to make them suitable for the operation that they have. That's where the kind of gastric balloons fit in and are useful. But, you know, obesity itself costs the NHS about £6 billion a year, and the associated health,
wow,
the things that come with obesity. So anything that we have that can help treat this is going to be hugely important and hugely beneficial for society.
So the gastric balloon is almost like a gastric band, but the other way, and cheaper for people that don't get it done on the NHS or whatever. Can I ask you what your top tips or advice would be for people that are wanting to access these weight loss drugs but aren't in that obesity, you know, on that spectrum, for someone that is just looking to lose weight, an average person, what would you say about these drugs?
So I would say don't, but I completely understand why people want to. So as I said before, anyone who's trying to lose weight is really, really difficult. and whether you are, you know, really in the obese category or just slightly overweight, and want to better your health by reducing your body weight. I understand that it's really, really difficult and really challenging. What I would say is that, as I've said before, that safety risk profile associated with these drugs is really designed for those people with the most severe levels of obesity. So it's a risk if you are not in that category. And those restrictions, as frustrating as they can be, if you do not fit into that category but still want help, they're there for, because that's the safety profile. That's where the safety profile has been tested. What I would also say is that these drugs, so drugs like Wegovy, for example, drugs that are similar to that have been around for a few years to treat patients with diabetes. And what we're seeing now is that those patients who need these drugs in order to maintain their blood sugar levels, and to maintain their health, are now struggling to access these drugs because there's such a demand for them from the weight loss market. So what we're seeing is that people who are not requiring these drugs, the market is so hot for them, the off-label prescribing or people accessing them through other means, means that those people who
actually
who,
need
people
them.
With diabetes who need them for their health are really struggling to access them. So I know personally people who have had to change medication because they can no longer get the drug that was really helping to control their blood sugar levels just because the demand is so high. So again, it's about looking at this from a societal perspective as well, and those people who are being impacted. But as I say, I completely get it.
It's just people that are like, I don't want to go in a calorie deficit. I'm just going to take a pill instead.
And I think that's an important. I mean, it's an important point because these drugs, they do not in and of themselves cause you to lose weight loss. These drugs do not burn fat. What they do is they inhibit your appetite. So you still have to go on a calorie deficit in order to lose weight. Oh. You still have to increase your exercise.
People aren't going
to
like that, Simon. I'll tell you that.
I'm the harbinger of that.
Thank you so much for all of the amazing information. I think there's going to be a lot of listeners today that are going to be like, oh God, maybe I should just eat a little bit healthier. But honestly, it's been amazing talking to you. Thank you for all of your expertise, and I wish you an amazing rest of your day.
You too. Thank you very much.
Bye. How interesting, right? I don't know about you, but I won't be touching those pills ever. Okay, anyway, moving on to Gabby's exercise of the week. And it's a very, very simple one. Walking. I was on ITV News recently. Did you know that? And I was talking about the new research that we only need 4,000 steps a day, rather than the 10K that we've been previously recommended. But to some extent, I do agree with it because it's a minimum, right? That's the minimum that we should be aiming for. But I think by lowering the recommended step count, we are giving people the excuse to be less active. And walking is literally the most accessible, free way to get moving, isn't it? 10,000 steps a day may be unrealistic for some people, and fair enough. So you can aim for a smaller number, but there's just so many benefits to it. So it offers cardiovascular improvement, first of all, and then it's so good for your circulation, your mental health, your physical health, everything. And that combined with strength work and stretching, because we all should be stretching, is just a perfect combination, really. And this doesn't have to be heavy weightlifting or anything like that, but everybody should be doing some sort of functional fitness. Body weight, squats, you know, wall sits, planks at home, press ups on the wall if you can't press up on the floor, or press up on your knees, whatever it is. But just doing something is going to improve your overall bone health, muscle mass, flexibility, cardiovascular health, circulation, blah, 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 blah. So getting your steps in also, as I said, benefits your mental health too. And for me, there's nothing better than clearing your head on a dog walk. It releases those feel-good endorphins, boosts your mood, energy, and resets your focus, and definitely, for me, reduces my stress levels. That's why I do about 18,000 steps a day, guys. That's how I'm so zen. I don't know what's ever going to cause me to be zen. Maybe another 10,000. But listen, setting an achievable step count to hit every day is a bonus in itself, because when you reach that goal, you feel a sense of achievement in it. And, you know, that's like one thing that you've ticked off and boxed off for that day. So if there's to do it for one thing, do it for that. And also, If your goal is to lose weight, increasing your NEAT, which is your non-exercise activity thermogenesis, sounds very, very formal, doesn't it? But basically just moving more outside of your workouts. So your workouts being like your strength sessions, like when you actually set your watch, your NEAT is just your everyday activity. And that is definitely something that I would be focusing on, improving your step count, doing the washing, you know, spring cleaning. I always find that I burn so many calories during my spring clean. Not that I do that often, to be honest, but that's one of the best ways to do it. And it kills two birds with one stone. You're improving your NEAT count, is that what you would say? Basically, burning the calories outside of exercise is going to help you to get into that calorie deficit if losing weight is what you want. So, with that being said, coming after this break, go and get walk around your kitchen, get some steps in. We'll be joined by Jason Frost, owner of Fitbox Gym. So I will see you then.
Hey!
FUBAR Radio presents
All Areas. Mark from Married at First Sight UK.
See, at the wedding, you told Sean you were 26, but you're actually 36.
Oh, yeah.
So drop in that decade. We ain't gone 1 or 2 years either side. What was going for you, Edwin? I'm going to shave off 10 years.
A third of your life.
Yeah.
It was instant reaction. As soon as anyone says to me, how old are you? I'm like 26. I just stopped counting after 26. Would I have told Jim? Probably not.
No. Ever?
Well, maybe when we're 80 years old and we've got the grandkids running round.
Except like, you wouldn't be 80 years old. You'd be 90.
Yeah, you'd be 90. I'd be 26 still. I'd be going around the corner for some more injections.
Uncensored. Joining me now, the former leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, MP. And there you are stood with hundreds of thousands of people at Glastonbury singing "Oh Jeremy Corbyn." What is that like?
It was quite extraordinary. It was an amazing experience, and I was very pleased we did it. We wrote, the office got very excited about Glastonbury. Every single person in the office thought it was necessary for them to be at Glastonbury.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. Yeah.
Every single one said it's really necessary for them to come. The
Dating Show. I'm friends with a fair few exes, and I think you can be friends with an ex, but I genuinely do. But I do think that it's timing is everything with that.
I think it depends what you class as a friend.
Yeah,
are you talking about, you know, someone you're going to hang out with on your sofa? Like, if you've already shagged, you know, isn't that a bit weird?
Think that's a different level of friend. I think that's a different level of friend. You can be friends with someone. You can't be, like, best fucking friends with someone. I mean, I've got exes that I talk to about their current partners and whatever else, and they'll tell me about that sort of stuff. But I wouldn't say, oh, do you want to come over for fucking Chinese and chill on the sofa?
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
Welcome back. This week, I'm joined by Jason Frost, owner of Fitbox Gym. Hello, Jason. How are you today? Can you hear me?
Hi, Gabby. How are you?
I'm great. Nice to meet you. Thanks for coming on the show.
It's all right. Thanks for inviting me.
So we're going to break the ice. We're going to get to know each other a little bit. Well, I'm going to get to know you in a little bit more. Can I give you some quick fire questions? The aim is to answer them as quickly as possible in minimal words, okay? So 3 words to describe yourself.
Energetic, full of life, and no fear.
Love that. Love the no fear one. Upper or lower day? What's your fave?
Upper.
Shock. All the men say upper, all the women say lower. Workout in the morning or evening?
Or morning boy, all day long, 5 a.m.
Same. Well, maybe not 5, but by the time it gets to the evening, I'm like, oh, do I really have to go and do this now? Okay, what is your go-to cheat meal?
Or definitely a pizza.
Pizza, what would you have on it though? Sorry, I need to know this.
Pepperoni, cheese. I'm quite plain Jane, but definitely.
Spice, chilies? You've got to have chili on a pepperoni pizza.
No.
Oh, God.
No, I'm a plain Jane. I quite like things as they come out. So, yeah, literally cheese and pepperoni and cheese.
Fair enough. And what is your go-to workout anthem?
Workout plan?
No, anthem. Like, what's your song that you play when you want to go and smash it?
Oh, God. At the moment, I'm listening to a lot of RBAT, which is like techno stuff, which is what we're playing in the gyms a lot at the moment. But yeah, anything we'll get, definitely RBAT.
Like stuff with a bit of like,
Yeah, not all the time, but most of the time.
Depends what you're doing. If you're doing a bit of yoga, you might want a bit of like chilled out music.
Yeah, okay. Turn it down a little bit.
Fair enough. So we've conquered that you are a plain Jane, He likes to work out in the mornings and he likes basically. Yeah. So this is very interesting for me. I've been dying to have this chat. Can you talk to us about your prison experience and the first couple of months after leaving?
Yeah, so obviously in 2009, I was sent to prison for 5 years for a fight that I had. Obviously very remorseful for what I did. Obviously spent a lot of time in there, and that's actually when I got into the fitness game and started. I actually worked in the gym, so I was given a job in the gym. And I'd done my qualifications. I didn't even know that it was a thing, actually. I got offered the qualification while I was in there, went through with it, never really saw why I'd done it, never knew that I wanted to do that as a job, and then followed it through, and then now I'm the owner of the three gyms that I've got.
That's so amazing. Do you think having that to focus on when you was in there, was that something that literally just gave you purpose to get up and keep going every day?
Yeah, it definitely was a purpose to get up every day, but I never saw it as a career. I didn't even think about doing personal training as a career. That, you know, but it definitely got me out of bed every day, like knowing that I love going to the gym. And I think it's probably what kept me sane, but I didn't realise at the time.
Yeah, the power of training, just the power of exercise is crazy for your mental health. Like, and sometimes it's that battle of you really don't want to do it, but once you've done it, you're like, I wish I hadn't procrastinated for 15 minutes trying to convince myself to do it because I always feel better. It's like trying to remember that feeling. Yeah, completely, completely feel you on that. So when you came out, I feel very brazen, by the way, just asking you straight up, so please forgive me.
No, far away. I've told my story quite a few years now.
Okay, fabulous.
Why I'm on your show.
Yeah, definitely not the first person to ask you these questions, but, you know, just have to say it. When you first came out, did you find it hard to find a job? And is that, how did you basically come to the point where you're like, you know what, I'm actually going to use my personal training certificate?
Well, I came out and, like you said, yeah, jobs are hard because it doesn't matter what you've done in prison. As soon as you mention the word prison to an employee or someone who's interested, that no, people do turn their nose up at it. And it doesn't really, you know, no one even asks the question of what you've done and why you're in there. But they do, they don't. It limits you it limits you a lot. And you struggle to find employment. So I actually came out and became a worse person because you just end up surrounding yourself in wrong people. I end up getting involved in the drug game, and you know, and that just spiraled me. I wasn't even a bad lad when I went to prison. I just made a mistake of having a fight. I went to prison, couldn't get employment, and then turned to drugs and selling them, drugs and then selling them. And then my road just became worse and worse. So over the course of my time, you know, it took me about 8 years to go through the cycle of what I've done and come out the other side.
Yeah, that is such an amazing story.
But throughout that whole time, I had that personal training qualification, which I never even thought about.
So what was the turning point? What was the pivotal moment?
The turning point was that I spent nearly 9 to 10 years in the criminal in the criminal world. And I thought, do you know what? I need to sort this out today. The road ran out. The light of it all ran out. My friends were all going to jail. Nothing was ever changing. And I thought the only person who can make a change here is me. And I'm going to do it. I'm going to move away from the area that I'm surrounded by all these people in, and I'm going to see what comes of it. And I nearly again still didn't even think I was going to be a personal trainer. And then I went to I come to Brighton. And I went to this gym and I was like, do you know what? I could probably work here. And I wonder if they got any jobs. And the guy said to me, look, why don't you be a personal trainer? I said, well, I've got a qualification. And he was like, look, I'll give you a few months for free inside my gym to get your business up and going. And that's what I did. And I absolutely smashed it.
Amazing. That's just so inspiring. You know, I think the fact that you had been through all of that turmoil and almost like didn't have any other choice. You know, you said you were selling drugs and then doing drugs and just around the wrong people. It's like, you know, it's just a never ending domino effect, isn't it? So
the thing is, it's so hard to escape. You know, it was so hard to escape, but I had to make that decision to go. And it was only me who could make that decision. And you know, thank God that decision I made, and then look for where, you know,
yeah, look at you now. Since, yeah, honestly, it's amazing.
Yeah, you know, I'm literally just in this other gym now. We're literally just building it, and You know, I still don't. People always say, "Are you proud of where you got to?" And my answer is always no. I never look at what I've done and be proud of it, because I don't think I finished what I've set out to achieve.
Yeah, no. The world is your oyster at this point. Is this your fourth gym?
This is the third one now, but they'll actually be doing a fourth one tomorrow. So,
bloody hell, he's taking over, guys.
Yeah, I'll be coming to a town near you very soon.
So, tell me, when you started off as that personal trainer, where that guy took a chance on you and you absolutely smashed it, how did you then evolve to where you are now? What was like the steps? Did it literally blow up, or was it kind of a bit of a slog to get where you are now? Oh, he's frozen.
So yeah, it was a graph. Like, I didn't remember. I ran away to Brighton. I never met a single. I didn't know a single person here. So I had to go out and I had to put my name out there. And I just went out and grafted and made a scene. And what I did is I started doing transformations, but at an affordable price. And I kind of look at, if you look at like David Lloyd or someone like Third Space in London, they're charging a premium product, which they are. They're a great venue. What I did was, where all these people are charging a premium product for personal training, I thought, well, how can I make a quick buck? Because I was skint and I needed a way of making money. So I thought, if I charge £200 for like 10 sessions of personal training, basically what I've done is make it, I've made it accessible for everyday people to be able to have a personal trainer. And also I could get some money in my bank because I'm skint. And all of a sudden there was just this massive demand. And I think I signed up 45 people in one day once.
Oh my God, you on your own?
And I was like, all right, well, this business model clearly works. And then I just took it and it grew. And then I ended up with like two trainers. I ended up with four trainers. And then all of a sudden COVID struck. And then I was back down to nothing.
Ah, bloody C word.
Yeah. So we then, obviously COVID then allowed me to take a step back from where we was, sort of like regroup, what's going on, what can we do? And I then thought, well, I've got some money in the bank now, I'll go and open a small group training facility, which is now known as Fitbox, and I will then start doing PT within my own gym. And that's all I ever set it out to be. I wanted it to be a PT studio with just me, and maybe some other coaches will work in there. And then it went on from there to teaching like four people, then six, and then 12. And now there's 16 people in a group.
Wow.
And I've always just kept the prices affordable. And we've just managed to find a market that we train everyday people to get up, get active, and become the best versions of themselves.
That's amazing. Are all your gyms in Brighton? Because I need to come and visit one.
Yeah, we've got two. I've got one in Brighton, the one we're opening now. I've got one in Hove, which obviously is about 2 miles down the road. And then we've got one in the Cotswolds. And the fourth one is hopefully going to be in Eastbourne. And we've got a few sites that we're looking at in Surrey. So.
Okay, cool. Where are you originally from? London?
I'm from Essex, like near Laugham.
Okay. So removing yourself from the situation, popping yourself into Brighton has just changed your life. Yay for
100%.
Brighton.
100%. But I can imagine that if anyone's looking on at this thinking, well, that sounds easy, but it's a hard, I ran away from every single person I knew, my family and everyone. You know, I didn't look at that at the time thinking this is a positive, but I look back at it now and go, wow, imagine if I'd done that 8 years ago.
Yeah, but you know what, everything in hindsight, you can't, we all make mistakes and regret things, but you've learned your lesson. As you said, you were remorseful for that shit in the past, and now you're now doing stuff for the greater good. Like, you're literally helping so many people every single day. That must be so rewarding for you. Would you say, I know you said that you're not like necessarily proud of where you are right now, but I'm sure you get some sense of achievement, or as I said, reward for helping all those people.
I get more sense of achievement out of the people that we help every day, I think. There was a woman recently who came to us. She was 28 stone. She didn't have much money, and we completely changed her life. She's now at 20 stone.
Wow.
She's lost a massive and considerable amount of weight. She feels like she hasn't bust the bank, and she's still she's still living, and that's the pride what comes from me, really.
100%.
I'm helping. I'm giving back for all I've done, really.
Yeah, that's like, honestly, that is a testament to you and, your ethos now, I think. The fact that you are essentially making up for things that you might not have done in the past again.
Yeah, and a lot of the time as well, like, I give advice. I've done a lot. I've been through, I would say there's no place worse than being in jail. You are a rock bottom.
Yeah.
That is, once they shut that door behind you, you have nothing.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
My journey now is all about, you know, I can help people and I see things happening all the time. And I'm like, mate, what about if you've done this and this rather than that? And, you know, I kind of look at myself a little bit of like a life coach, and I haven't gone down that road yet, but
that's the next steps. Yeah, you could definitely do that. I feel like you've had enough experience and you've got enough knowledge about people as well, and how to, as you just said, yeah, helping people, being more assertive, not just taking the easy way out. You know, that's definitely something that I can see you doing now. You're going to end up like fit box. What can we call it? Life box, something like that.
Yeah, life box. There we go. There you go. You've done the name.
Yeah, I want a cut.
Yeah, you do.
So can I ask, the members of your community, do they all know your background as well?
Yeah. And one thing I've learned in life is that the more you hide away from the fact you've been in prison, the more questions that people make, or the more questions that people have in their head, and stories start getting made up what he could have done. It's best to talk about it. It's best to get it out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've never had so much support, really. Like, all my, I get people come up to me every day and be like, mate, your story's amazing. Well done. Well done.
Yeah.
You know, and I get messages on social media like, you know, like, I've just done the same thing. Like, what I want to do is get into jails, and I want to get in there and go, look, do a course, believe in something, follow it through, and I could do, you know, you could do exactly the same as what I've done.
I was literally just about to say to you, would you do talks like that? So not even just in jail, where you can go in and say, like, listen, this doesn't have to be your life now. Like, I came out and I did 8 years of X, Y, and Z, and then it took me to this point, blah, blah, blah. But you don't have to go through all that if you just do a course, as you said, but also maybe talking to younger people and people that might be on the wrong path.
Giving someone a bit of light at the end of the tunnel, because when you go into that tunnel, doesn't matter if it's depression, no job, going to jail, you go into this tunnel and you can't see out of it.
Mm.
So showing people that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and there's people who have gone through this system and come out the other side going, do you know what? Let's turn it into a positive. That's why we're at rock bottom. There's going to be something, there's always light at the end of a tunnel. And it's always probably best to look around you and go, right, who's done that journey? What did they do? I want to be like him.
Yeah, amazing. It's so inspirational. And I think that's something, hopefully someone hears this and can put you on, you know, on that path to doing that as well. Because I think there's definitely room for that. Do you, before you went to jail, would you say, I know you said that it was a mistake, but do you think you was in the wrong kind of, were you surrounding yourself with the wrong people? Or was it literally just a one-off thing?
It was a one-off thing, but I do believe that when you're at alpha males or whatever you want to call yourself, and you surround yourself and you've got 15 alpha males rocking up at a party, you know, it's, but you're only young. I was only like 17, 18, you know, I punched a guy at a party and he hit the floor. You know, he's, just so everyone knows, he is alive and well. But, you know, it's hard to say at that age. You can't be taught. No one can tell you otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think you've come very far. You should be very proud of yourself.
Thank you,
Gabby. If you could tell your younger self, that 17-year-old boy, anything, what would you say to him?
Oh, so I think about this a lot, actually. I've seen the post recently about people saying this. And I think the younger, if I had to tell myself something now, it would be to get your head down, work hard, and make a career for yourself early doors rather than hanging on to your 30s. You know, I'm 35 now, I'm ticking on, but I'm trying to catch up with all the years that I've just lost.
Hey, listen, so the phase, we're in our prime.
Yeah, well, apparently that's what I keep getting told.
But, I know. I just turned 32 and I'm like, bloody hell. Now. I know. Well, so can I ask, do you think there's more sport and fitness initiatives that would help reduce violent crime amongst young men? Like, do you think more younger people should be encouraged to do other things such as just partying? I feel like it has changed a lot. I feel like fitness is very much more welcomed in our society these days. There's not as many people just going out raving as there is, you know, people going on run clubs.
Look,
and
fitness
stuff.
Is one of the fastest growing industries in the world, and it always will be. And I literally had that conversation with someone today, like sobriety and stuff, where people are, you know, are not drinking as much. I do believe that the youth of today are looking at their fitness more than they are of going out raving. I feel like the nightclub industry is probably on its way. It was on its knees anyway. I can imagine in the next 5 to 10 years, it's probably going to be on its way out.
100%.
People are going to go out there, not going to be drinking. People can't even afford to drink anymore.
No, I know.
So it's a case now of, well, actually, I want to be fit. I don't want to feel rubbish. I don't want mental health. I want to be fit. And I feel like the age that's coming through now will be the new age of a whole new development in the fitness industry.
Yeah, I completely agree. And we had someone on last week, I think it was, a girl that's been sober for 6 years now. And it's just, she's like, there's so many different avenues you can go down. As you've just said, not spending your money on your drink. You can go to a class that's 25 quid and it's like a quarter of the price that you would spend on a night out when you're just boozing with your mates, you know?
Yeah. And that's it. The drinking game now is so expensive. People haven't got the money. And when you come out the other side of it and you wake up every morning, or whatever, how many times you drink, you wake up in the morning, you feel like absolute shite. Where does this stop?
Yeah, it's just a vicious circle. You know what? I've absolutely loved talking to you today. I think you are so inspirational. And I think that you've literally, even though you're 35, you've got so many amazing things to come your way. I literally think that the world, as I said before.
Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
Yeah, you've been amazing. It's been great talking to you. And have an amazing rest of your day. Good luck with the search of the studios. Take care.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you.
See ya. How amazing. Honestly, that is just so inspiring for me. How people can turn their lives around like that and make just better for the greater good. I just think that is just amazing. And on that note, I'm all emotional. Coming up after this, we're going to be joined by the fabulous Catherine Rebess, registered dietitian specialising in gastro and nutrition support. See you then.
FUBAR Radio presents The
Dating Show. So we have got the incredible Sunita.
How does Sunita whittle down the people she wants to talk to the people she doesn't? What's your criteria?
Well, you've got to be an adult.
Okay.
That's always a good start.
Always a good start. But when I'm an adult, not just like 18, you've got to be like not young enough to be my child. You have to ideally be London-based, because I am. Yeah. Although I don't mind if you've got a country pad, that would be nice.
So at the minute we're going with age and location are important.
Age and location are good.
Every Friday from 6 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio presents What the
Health with Gabby Allen. Joining me now is Millie Gooch, author and founder of Sober Girl Sobriety Society. I need to know what is so bad about dating sober.
I think it's just terrifying when it's something that you're not used to, because when I was drinking and dating, you know, like, you use it to calm your nerves, you use it for confidence, you rely on it. And I think that's the one thing I realised when I stopped drinking, is how much I really relied on alcohol. I was always kind of saying, you know, like, oh, I'm not dependent on it, but for my confidence I was really. But I also think there's so many benefits to it, like I used to go on so many dates when I was drinking, I'd be like, they are the one, and then I'd meet them a few weeks later sober and I'd be like, we've got nothing in common. What was going through my mind? I'd be like, oh, it was because I was drunk.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
Harpreet, how are you, my love?
I'm great, thank you. How are you? It looks fun in there.
I want to talk about this because obviously you met your partner on The Apprentice. When did you start to get that feeling, I'm into him and this is more than just a banter or a friendship? Because it's a close environment being on a show like that, isn't it?
I really wish I could sit here and give loads of juicy gossip. Actually, we used to secretly meet in the laundry room on the show, but we didn't. And when I actually last spoke with yourselves, I think it was right after I'd won, we weren't even flirting, never mind dating. First time that I thought I actually fancied him was when I watched him on TV and I watched episode one.
How funny.
I was like, hang on. You know, he's actually really good looking.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani.
And joining me in the studio, we have Deputy Leader of the Green Party, Zach Polanski. Zach, thank you so much for joining us. How are you keeping, Zach?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. How are you?
So you're hoping for 4 MPs in the general. You think that's going to happen?
Yeah, that's absolutely the minimum at what we're
I don't want to be Piers Morgan here, but will you take I don't have £1,000, will you take a £100 bet with me that you'll get 4 MPs?
Well, I do everything in politics to talk about the harms of gambling. So for me to place a bet on there would be pretty, you know, pretty horrendous.
Before we had you on, we discussed with the producers as to whether I should do the bet joke, and I said I would, because I had every faith that you would answer it in the way I expect a politician of any moral
standing. We should also talk about cryptocurrency, which also is very problematic.
Rishi, if you're listening, mate, that's how you answer a betting question.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Foo Bar Radio.
Hello again. Welcome back. Oh, I bloody love doing this, you know. I feel like today's show has been so inspiring and motivating, and it just really excites me for the future and who else we're going to get to talk to. If you ever find anyone that you would love me to discuss anything with, please do send them over to us, because we would love to know who you are dying to meet as well. That means so much to us. We want you to enjoy listening to this just as much as I and you enjoy presenting this. So yeah, fire them over for me, please, guys. And next up, we have a fantastic person joining us very soon, who's going to talk to us about the importance of eating 30 plants a week. I was going to say a day then, but that would be impossible. But she's not quite here yet, so I'm going to talk to you about some questions that you've fired over to me this week. First of all, are resistance bands worth it? Josie says to me, can you explain what resistance bands do? Will they help me build muscle? So, in short, I bloody love resistance bands. They are so accessible for everybody. They are easily to transport, that you can literally take a resistance band with you everywhere you go. You can put it around your neck, you can put it on your arm, you can put it in your bag. But they're also super affordable, so most people can get their hands on a resistance band. So if in doubt, band it out. I love them to use before a workout because they're great to activate in the activation phase. So for example, I've definitely said this before, in your glute workouts, love a glute workout as we know, popping on a band and doing some activation exercises before is what's going to encourage the little muscles that we don't necessarily always attack in our big compound exercises such as the squats and stuff. The bands are really great for turning those on. They are what we call the stabilizer muscles. So they encourage those to work harder in the bigger movements, if that makes sense. And that being said, if strength and muscle is a goal, I would focus on a weight-based program and then incorporate your resistance bands into it for a full 360 comprehensive approach. You can do both exercises without, like you can do squats with just the bands, but obviously adding some weight to it is just going to make it that little bit spicier. And then alternatively, you can obviously do squats without the band too. But in a squat, for example, putting a band on is going to encourage you to focus on your form and technique more, because you are aware that something is pulling your knees together. But what do we always say in a squat? Push your bloody knees out, knees behind the toes, knees pushed out, weight in your heels. Perfect squat. Thank you very much. Okay, moving on. We now have a question from Abby. Should I consume more protein if I'm not lifting weights, heavy weights? I'm not sure if I'm working hard enough to need more protein. Okay, first of all, everybody needs protein. You have between 1.8 and 2 grams of protein per kilo of body weight. I always have to make sure I'm saying that right, just in case people end up like overdosing on protein. So first of all, protein is not just for gaining muscle mass, it's for bone density, maintaining muscle mass, transporting carbohydrates around the body, micronutrients that, you know, a chicken breast isn't just fully protein. It's got loads of other good things in there as well. So you should be consuming enough of that to maintain optimal health anyway. I would say aim for 1.8 if you aren't necessarily looking to build muscle mass. And then if you were then to introduce some heavier weights, then you can look at it incorporating more protein into your diet. But in short, obviously I like to go around the houses, don't I? In short, you need to be hitting your protein macro regardless of whether you're hitting heavy weights or not. And then you can kind of play around with your carbs and fats depending on what it is your fitness wellness goal is. But always between 1.8 to 2 grams of protein per kilo of body fat. Wait. Okay, I think we have our guest now. Do we have our guest in the house? Yes, we do. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We have the wonderful Catherine Rebess. Can you hear me? Hello, hello, hello.
Thank you so much. I am, you'll have to wait for me. My connection, I don't know what's just happened here, but I've just lost you. But it's so nice to meet you, Gabby.
It's so nice to meet you too. Thank you for joining us. Don't worry, as long as we can hear you, it doesn't matter. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Yes, I can. I'm sorry, there's a lag.
Oh, it's fine. You look wonderful anyway, so we'll just crack on and pretend that it doesn't matter. You know? Okay, so how... First of all, The 30 Plan. You are the author of a book called The 30 Plan, Why Eating 30 Plants a Week Will Revolutionise Your Gut Health. I love that. I do aim for it, but I feel like it's very hard to get in the diversity amongst the vegetables because Sainsbury's doesn't necessarily offer 30 different vegetables every day. I have to be honest. Is she there?
Are you hearing me okay?
Oh, gosh. Don't worry. Technical difficulties, guys. Nothing that we haven't dealt with before. If you are still here and listening to me, I just want to know, can you let me know on the Instagram, do you reckon you eat 30 fruit and veg a day? Not a day, a week.
A week.
Week. Oh, here she is. She's back. She's back. Oh. Welcome back, Catherine. Tell me, how important is it to eat 30 plants over the course of a week?
So important. So there was a study that was done in 2018, which looked at people who were having multiple different plants in their diet. And what they found with people that were having 30 plants or more a week, they had better gut health and overall a better health and well-being. So extremely important. I think as well, you know, it's good for our digestion and gut. There's been so many links with gut health. And our overall being as well. So,
I think gut health is one of the biggest things that everybody talks about these days. Isn't it funny how I'm thinking about to when I was younger, gut health was never even mentioned. And now it's like something that everyone, like, if in doubt, blame your gut. The gut's responsible for everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's so true. But I think sometimes what people don't realise is nutrition is a relatively new science. When we compare it to the rest of, you know, the science world, you know, the discovery of antibiotics and things like that. So it's still really quite new, but with the developing of, you know, research looking at our gut microbiome, which is all the microorganisms in our gut, because that's developing so rapidly, it means that we're able to start looking at that information and being able to analyze and interpret what that means for our overall health.
It's so exciting. Snap. What are the main symptoms then of an unhealthy gut?
Really good question. I think it's important that you understand what is healthy for you first, because it can be different for other people. So, you know, on average, you should be going to the toilet maybe as little as 3 times a week to up to 3 times a day. So it's really about understanding what's a normal bowel movement, you know, going to the poo, how often is important to you. The next thing is about thinking about other gut symptoms. So, you know, if you're experiencing a lot of abdominal pain or, you know, bloating, which continues throughout the day and doesn't get any better, that could be an indication that something's going on. But if you're also experiencing things like acid reflux or really bad heartburn, or, you know, you're feeling extremely tired, or you're actually seeing any sort of signs of infection at all, whether it be changing bowel habit, you know, diarrhea, or actually becoming really, really constipated, it's really important that you get that checked out and go to your doctor.
So speaking of, right, basically probiotics. So I feel like I must have quite good gut health because, you know, I won't go into too much information, but things are working okay. But I have then been told that everybody should be taking probiotics in some case. Is that true?
So I wouldn't agree with that. No. As a specialist gut health dietitian, we always are trying to look at, you know, food first and how you can actually get probiotics from your diet, because there's quite a lot of foods that contain natural sources of probiotics. And what biotics are essentially beneficial microorganisms that when ingested, so when you eat them, they prove to be a host on the body. So that could be things from like live natural yogurt, you know, you can find that in Greek yogurt or just, you know, your standard natural yogurt. You can get it from fermented foods, so things like kombucha, kefir, kimchi, you know, pickled veg. So you can get really good sources of these beneficial bacteria from natural foods. You don't necessarily need to take a probiotic. But what I will say is if you do suffer with any sort of bowel condition such as IBS or irritable bowel syndrome or you experience, you know, you've been on traveling, you've got a really bad tummy after traveling, you've got lots of, you know, diarrhea. Mm. Probiotics have been proven to be really beneficial with reducing those terms. But it's key that if you do decide to take one, that you do speak to your doctor or a dietitian and make sure that the strain
yeah.
that you're taking is...
Because it can go the other way, right?
Yeah.
I've witnessed that.
Yeah.
Not experienced, exactly. Witnessed. There's a difference. So speaking of which... Absolutely. It's actually a big health trend, isn't it? The fermented foods like kefir and what was the other one you said, beginning with K?
Kombucha.
Yeah, kombucha. First of all, I feel like they're like quite, they sound just so exotic, first of all. They're not really that easy to get your hands on them, are they? So if people don't necessarily fall over a kefir every day of their life, should they take a probiotic instead? Would that be a good alternative?
Well, you can get it in natural yogurt. So that's a really easy thing to get. And even if, you know, you're lactose intolerant vegan, it doesn't have to be from a cow. You can go for like coconut-based yogurt or soya-based yogurt. They often contain live cultures as well. And they're really easy to get. What I would say is you just have to be easy when it comes to fermented foods. Like introduce them slowly.
So yeah, small doses.
Maybe like twice a week and see how you go, because... Of course, they've got millions and millions of beneficial bacteria, but when we actually consume that can cause bloating, it can cause a bit of change in a bowel habit. So it's really important that you gradually do it.
And, yeah, because it's a process, right? It's like it's almost creating a new film or like a new, you know, a new environment in there for your natural stuff to exist in. So, you know, it's like you don't want to push yourself into someone's home. You want to, like, gradually step in.
Easy way in, yeah, like,
hi. Yeah, just a little casual hi before you're like, welcome. Okay, so I want to talk then about something that's a bit of a different approach, more of a holistic approach.
Yeah.
This study is suggesting that mindful breathing and CBT can help improve gut health. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's really powerful, actually. A couple of weeks ago...
I didn't know what you were going to say then. I didn't know where you were going to go, no, that's not it.
I'm all for it. I often, with a lot of my clients, I recommend breath work and mindfulness, because there's a link between the gut and the brain called the gut-brain axis. And 70% of serotonin, which is our happy hormone, is actually made in our gut. So if there is any disruption between the communication, the brain and the gut, it can lead to symptoms. So by doing breath work and mindfulness, we can actually slow down our nervous system and actually support digestion and support our gut from functioning adequately. So definitely recommend.
That is amazing. I think that's just it's another thing that people, I think meditation and basically I'm going off on a bit of a tangent now, but meditation and those kind of things like gut breathing, you know, CBT or mindful breathing, meditation, those are kind of might be quite alien to some people. And I think people just think, oh, it's just another thing that I have to do. But it is mad how these studies and how all your, you know, all the time that has been going in to prove these things, actually, when you actually just take the time on your own as your own physical self rather than introducing everything else, it's crazy what you can actually do with these mindful things, like the power of the mind, right? I find I don't meditate enough. Maybe that's my problem.
I'm the same. I do try and do some breath work every day if I can, but it can be so helpful with relaxing the gut, because when we're actually stressed, we increase our adrenaline, don't we? So, you know, there's fight or flight, the blood pressure goes up, our breathing increases, and actually we then end up pulling oxygen and blood away from our gut.
Yeah.
And it slows things down. So that can then cause symptoms like bloating, constipation, or it might go the other way and things get overstimulated and lead to diarrhea. But when we're looking at breath work, we can really reset that nervous system and really focus on slowing and calming down our body.
My mind's going off on one now, because I'm thinking I actually tend to hold my breath quite often, and then I'm like, I have to remember to breathe, and then and notice that I hold my stomach, and that can't be good because I'm probably just putting so much pressure on down there that, yeah, and then I end up feeling like I've got a bit of indigestion or something, and it's probably all because I'm like just practicing holding my breath. It could probably be good for other things, you know. I'd be great underwater.
Yeah. Get yourself a dive in.
Yeah, there you go. New profession, diving. So I want to ask you, TikTok, are you a big fan of TikTok?
I am, yeah. I'm not on TikTok, but I'm a big fan of it.
It's fine.
I'm like constantly sending TikToks between people.
Yeah, there's some great stuff on there. I'm still trying to get into it, but I just feel like I'm like past it with my age, even though I'm not old. I'm
old. Like that. I'm old, but no, you'd have a proper stroke. I think you do amazing on them.
Thanks, me love.
I don't belong there.
Well, I'm just wondering then if you've seen that people are taking a shot of olive oil before breakfast.
Well, Gabby?
Go on.
Right. So I've had a few clients recently that have asked that this is how powerful social media is, because news travels 6 times faster on any form of social media, usually misinformation, than it does on anything else. Mm. So I'm constantly having to catch up with the trends. Now, with the olive oil thing, so there was a study, I'll be honest, I heard about it because I had to do a bit of research. So there was a study that was done over a 3-year period, which showed that olive oil can, people that were following a Mediterranean diet, having extra virgin olive oil, they actually lost 80%. Body weight compared to those that didn't follow this diet, right? But I think it's really important that we're clear that that was part of a Mediterranean diet, which is one of the most studied diets out there. It would have also included in that research physical activity, sleeping well, you know, all other lifestyle factors too. And with a Mediterranean diet, we know that whole grains, you know, lots of fruit and veg. We know that actually limiting the amount of red meat, lots of fish, we all know that that is overall much better for our health. Mm-hmm. So I think that thing to just take with a pinch of salt. So,
yeah, you know, it's not like you're taking the olive oil and then having a Mackey's breakfast.
Yeah, exactly. But with gut health, because extra virgin olive oil specifically contains lots of plant chemicals called polyphenols, it actually can be really beneficial for our gut health. So I often recommend to clients, you know, making sure that you use extra virgin olive oil, even with cooking, like as much as you can. It doesn't have a high, you know, such a high cooking number, but it's still great to use for cooking and using as dressings and things like that. So I definitely would recommend incorporating it within your diet. But do you need to take a shot of it? I'm on the fence about that.
Okay, interesting. That was going to be, I was going to say, so yes or no then. Should I start doing that or not?
No.
Okay, fine. So what advice do you have for people wanting to improve the health of their gut? Like top tips, 3 top tips. Give them to me.
Increase your fiber. So trying to swap out as much, you know, refined carbohydrates with brown rice, brown pasta, whole wheat bread, you know, just trying to up your whole grains. Try and reduce your red meat consumption and incorporate more plant-based foods in your diet, things like beans, pulses, you know, lentils, peas. Try and incorporate more of that into your diet as well. And the next thing would be chewing your food really well. I know that sounds like
don't rush eating, basically. Yeah.
Don't rush eating.
I do that. Really, I look down and my food's gone. I'm like, where's it gone? Yeah. Who's eating it? Yeah. It's you, you greedy cow.
I always think as well, if you grow up siblings like I do, you are naturally born to just eat.
In case they rob it. Yeah. I mean, I've only got one brother, but I think I just, too. I'm just greedy. That's a very good one though. So would you say like really get it? What was Beyonce chews her food like 60 times before she swallows it or something? Just be there
so
all day.
Research shows like 10 to 20 times a mouthful is the most optimum amount to help with digestion, because if you're not and you're rushing, you're going to end up getting bloated. It makes digestion harder.
My jaw's already hurting.
So yeah, it's really important that you're chewing your food well.
Amazing. Well, Catherine, I've learned a lot from you today. Even though we lost that bit of time at the beginning, you made up for it with your brain. So thank you so much. I'm sure lots of our listeners learned a thing or two today as well. So it's been a pleasure having you on the show. And I hope I get to meet you in real life. I'll be buying your book as well.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 30 plan, guys. The 30 plan. Thank you, love. Have a great day. Speak soon.
You too.
How amazing! Another amazing chat. That was her book. What is it called? The 30 Plan, Why Eating 30 Plants a Week Will Revolutionise Your Gut Health. So, what a fantastic show. I hope you've enjoyed it just as much as I have. Look at the big smile on my face. It'll be just as sore later when I'm chewing my food 20 times before I swallow it. Remember, if you've got any fitness questions, throw them over to us on Instagram on What The Health Show. We want to hear them. We want to help you. And we want to talk to yous more. We want to talk to more amazing guests. So the more you follow us, the more amazing guests we can get on. And yeah, I'll see you again next week for another banging show. See you later.